Hi, I'm Archit.
And I'm Shirin.
And welcome to Getting Lost with Archit and Shirin, a podcast where two amateur cooks,
if you say so,
talk about all things food, from ingredients, recipes, techniques, and lessons from our trials in the kitchen. Every episode, Shirin, our producer Natasha, and I will do a deep dive into one singular topic and talk about literally everything we know.
So what are we talking about today, Archit?
Today, we're talking about cookies. We have all made cookies from time to time. These little flat discs of joy are diverse, fancy, simple, and delicious at the same time. This episode, we break down the things we do to make a good cookie, sprinkle in some good ideas for combinations that we love, and of course, leave you with some fun facts. So let's get started.
I love that you called the ideas good and your facts fun. It's like, before anyone makes a value judgment, I'll tell you guys.
Adjectives, yeah.
Yes. Okay, very nice. Let's go.
So what do you think of when I say the word cookie?
I think yummy. What about you?
I think of like, you know, sweet, small cake. like a tiny
like
treat.
A cupcake.
Cupcakes are like a commitment, you know, like a cookie is not as much of a commitment. You don't feel like you've had dessert when you've had one.
You know, I never understand when men talk about commitments. I'm not going to pretend to understand this one either. But okay, I guess it's just like something small for your giant hands to hold on to. But okay, before we go forward, I do have a disclaimer. May I?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Most of our listeners are from India, so this is for the very few who are not. Guys, when we say cookies, we mean proper cookies. We're not going to be talking about biscuits. And I know there's this whole thing about what's a cookie and what's a biscuit, which is why Ajit has his little notebook and he's going to totally talk about it, clear the air before we get into the dough. Go, Ajit, go.
So, I have fun facts. And this is the first one, which is all about the etymology of the word cookie. So the cookie actually comes from a Dutch term, which was called sweet cake. That's what it means in Dutch. Mm-hmm. It was coined in the 1700s. And then in the 1800s, the Americans like took it and they kind of used it to denote the chewy kind of cookies that they make at home.
Yeah.
But the UK took that same concept of like a chewy cookie and they started calling them biscuits. And essentially what the UK is talking about as biscuits is shortbread cookies.
Yeah, yeah.
So high butter, lots of white sugar, not chewy, but like crisp.
Yeah, and just crumbly.
Yeah, and those are really like, when we think of biscuits, even in India, we think of like, you know, Oreo and bourbon and like, what is it?
But
Oreo
also and bourbon, like a, you know, Crack Jack or a Monaco.
Right. So nothing very like chewy per se, a lot of like crispy, small. So that's really how like the terminology has come into India as well, because of course we were ruled by the people, you know, for like 400 years.
Wonderful,
but,
guys.
But yeah, so but today the focus is going to be on those like dense, handmade, chewy stuff.
Great. And those are yum. Like, I feel like I associate
and far
biscuits,
better.
Yes. I associate biscuits with everyday and cookies with special. So like,
yeah.
But also imagine like if I were to tell you, hey, Archit, I made biscuits for you. Would you get excited? I mean, instead, if I said, hey, Archit, I baked you some cookies.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if someone says, like, if you said that, you know, I made biscuits for you, my thought would be like, you know, they are like sold for like $10 outside. Like, you just bought them.
Why did you do it, Shirin? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Hmm. Fair enough.
But
these cookies for like some crazy prices now. Like, I mean, I don't know if it's not crazy, but it's also just expensive. Like, I can't imagine paying 300 rupees for one cookie when I can bake them on my own.
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? You can bake them on your own.
Yes, that's what we're going to talk about. So why don't you kick it off and I shall just follow.
Sure, but I have more facts. Can I tell you
more
facts?
Oh, you have more facts. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. I am so glad you have more facts. Go for it.
Okay, so the first fact is all about chocolate chip cookies. You know, the OG, like the first thing that, you know, even the emoji about a cookie is the chocolate chip cookie.
B-E-S-T, best.
B-E-S-T, absolutely. So the chocolate chip cookie was made by accident. by a lady called Ruth Wakefield. And she was actually the inventor of the Toll House cookie. If you think of Toll House, Toll House is now a Nestle brand that makes chocolate chips. Friends reference, when she's like, Toll House.
Same lady. Let me interrupt you here. Wakefield is also a popular brand. So anything to do with the Wakefield brand or just...
It is, yeah. So Toll House was owned as a proprietary item by Wakefield, the owner of the Wakefield brand. And then that piece was actually sold off to Nestle much later.
Why would they do that?
Sorry,
today I have like, my tongue isn't functioning.
That's a great thing to, you know, say at a day that you're recording a podcast.
I don't know what's going
on. So in the 1930s, she made this like chocolate chip cookie and she wanted to make a chocolate cookie, like a chocolate flavored cookie. Mm. She didn't have cocoa powder. So she's like, I will take this chocolate bar and just like break it into pieces and put it into my batter, thinking that it'll melt and it'll like become one thing. Turns out they didn't melt. And that's really the reason why these chocolate chip cookies became so famous is because they didn't melt.
Interesting. And like the way chips melt is also something that really defines the taste and experience of a cookie. And yeah. We should talk about that later, but that is actually a fun fact. Well done.
Another two more. And then...
cool, go fast.
The first one's very quickly. Is Oreo is the top selling cookie in the world. And it has been for the last 25 years.
But to me, it's always going to be a biscuit.
Right. But as a product, it's like the most famous product out there in this market.
Okay.
And because we're talking about biscuits, I do wanted to talk about like Indian biscuits because India is a really large consumer of biscuits.
Yeah.
So even though it's not a cookie per se, it still makes sense. And biscuits are popular in India only because we don't have shelving, that is, our supply chain is very old. So we would want things that can stay on shelves for longer. So they don't have eggs and all of that. So that's why biscuits became very popular in India.
Nice.
So Parle G is the most popular biscuit in India and parts of the African subcontinent because they are actually, they provide biscuits to African countries through the UN. And they have been doing that for the last 10 years. They actually have a special stamp just for those cookies as well. So they look different, but they are the same thing. And even though Parle G is so popular in India and parts of the world, Britannia has the largest market share at 29% in 2021. And that's only because we ate a shit ton of cookies and, sorry, biscuits all through the lockdown.
Are you serious?
Yeah. The cookie market went doubled from 2019 to 2020 just because we ate so much.
Great. Those were biscuits. So biscuits, go buy. But cookies, please make. Ajit,
yes.
Let's go.
Okay. So for cookies and any cookie for that matter, there are five basic elements that you need. And of course, there are substitutions to all. So do not drop off right now. I will tell you substitutions as well.
Except for butter, right? There's no substitute for butter, at least in this episode.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, cool. Because I was going to drop off.
No, but there are different forms of butter that you can use and you will talk about that. So the five elements of a cookie are essentially flour, sugar, stabilizers, eggs, and fat. So those are the five things. If you have these things, you can make a cookie. Everything else, the chocolate, nuts, whatever like flavorants that you want to add, all of those things are under your control and you can do whatever the hell you want with them. But these five things you need to make a cookie.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you go by the order, flour is really important for two reasons. One, structure, because it's not only like, it's not only the cement of the cookie, but it's actually the bricks on which the flavor is like laid on, lathered
well
on.
Well said.
I know, I thought of that like 10 minutes ago. It was great.
Oh, you said it. Cute.
Yeah, I have written it down. Like, that's how like proud I was of it.
It's very good, very good.
And of course, there are substitutes to this, but each substitute changes the way the chemistry of the batter will work. And we've talked about chemistry and baking in our cake episode. And so you can change it, but AP flour or maida is your best friend. However, you can do it with whole wheat and other like, you know, oat flour and things like that. And we'll talk about those uses for
sure. But like, bear in mind, everyone, that when you change one of the components, the others will have to like move around to accommodate. Yeah. So for example, if you're using atta, atta is going to absorb a lot more moisture. So you may need more fat, or you may need a little more like, you know, lubrication in your dough. So just be mindful of how substitutions, especially in cookies, don't just work with like one change. You substitute one thing, you have to fix the rest.
Yep, absolutely. So the second one is sugar. And sugar, well, it's kind of obvious. It's all about flavor with sugar, because that's like what makes something sweet. The second thing that sugar does really well is that it adds a lot of moisture. And the yes. third thing is texture. So it's like the defining reason, and one of the most important things that defines a cookie being crispy or chewy.
Yeah.
So more and white sugar.
You need to listen, right? When people in recipes say, oh, you need this much white sugar and you need this much brown sugar. Because brown sugar does different things than white sugar. I mean, they both sweeten almost equally. But in terms of texture and in terms of experience and flavor, they do very different things. And together, they do something else entirely. Like, they're a great match.
Together is the best.
Siblings, not a match.
Yeah, that's siblings. Interesting, yes. Speaking of siblings, the next thing that we have is stabilizers, and they kind of work as siblings as well. We have baking soda and baking powder, and Shirin has a great way to remember this. So Shirin, how do you think, what do you think of when you think of these two powders?
Soda spreads and powder puffs.
Absolutely. The next one that we have is eggs, and we have so many questions about eggs. One,
oh my God, your followers are all about the egg substitutes.
I know.
You post about eggs like thrice a week. It's a bit like much in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that was like my like little like mini series of like, so that the hope was that if I create those content pieces, then people will stop asking me for like eggless things.
Would you love it when they ask you?
I mean, it's engagement is engagement, right? But I see, the thing with eggs is that I'm okay with like asking for eggless substitutes, but like the reason why someone asks for them is kind of like baseless, which is where like my problem stands. But that's for another episode.
That's
I guess.
For you. Yeah, that's for you. We've done this episode.
So for eggless, so for eggs, sorry. First of all, if you want to add eggs, which you should definitely add eggs. There are three reasons why, right? One, eggs are essentially your essential binder. All of these other things, some of them will be very alkaline, some of them will hive in moisture, some of them will do other shit. But what eggs do is that they take all of those things and they like bind them together. So in my analogy of a building, eggs are like the concrete, not even like cement. They're the concrete, like they are needed in that sense. Okay. They also lock in moisture.
Never go into the architecture or civil engineering field. Like, you're not doing this right.
I would like to say that I might be getting it right, but we'll need
experts there's a possibility.
On this.
Yeah. We live in a simulation. The matrix.
Yeah. So the other things that eggs do is that they lock in moisture, and because they're fat, they are helping that butter also like, you know, emulsify with the whole situation.
Yes.
Now there are substitutes to this. There is flax egg. Again, there's a reel about this on the page. So flax egg is a great substitute if you want to substitute an entire egg. But if you want to substitute a part of an egg, and specifically if you want to make a crispy cookie, you would do that with egg whites, then you would need something like aquafaba or agar. And those things will kind of simulate the same function as an egg white would do.
Yep. And you can check out our episode on eggless stuff and also Archit's Instagram to learn more. But one thing that stays in common across all of these, you know, variations of eggs is that it also helps to add air, and therefore it is really important for you to put your eggs one by one instead of dumping them into your batter. Now I'll tell you why, because eggs are actually pretty heavy. So if you're doing the whole, like, I'm going to cream my sugar and my butter and create lots of air, and then you just plonk three eggs in, you're going to deflate your batter with weight alone. And that's not something you want to do. It won't make a huge difference, but it will make enough of a difference in the end product for you to notice that something's off. So go one by one. And usually, like we say this all the time, crack your eggs into a katori before you put them in. Two reasons. One, you will be able to see if it's a good egg or a bad egg. I mean, your nose will tell you. Two, it's okay if you've got eggshells in your katori, but it's not okay if they're in your batter. So, gives you an opportunity to fix things, which so many times I need.
So, yeah, that's. And how do you remove an eggshell?
I do a gila chamach, and okay. It usually just sticks to it, or I use the bigger eggshell because it has a little bit of like an edge, like a jagged edge.
Yeah,
and it
cuts
through the egg whites and very nicely scoops up.
I use the eggshell method too. I think it's the best. The last thing that you need for a good cookie is fat. And fat is kind of just the most important thing. And we really can't tell you how to remove, why a cookie needs so much butter. It just needs it for its form factor, for it to sit together. And if, low-key, if you think your biscuit has less fat, it doesn't. So the ones you're buying from outside and you're like, oh, they, you know, you have no idea how much fat there is. Shortbread cookies are basically, biscuits.
Diet biscuits are a sham. And Ajit's right, shortbread cookies are basically just butter.
Yeah.
Bound together.
In fact, it's not even butter, right? So like a machine-made cookie like that, where you have to have a shelf life of like 6, 8, 10 months, they would remove the, they would try and remove anything that can decompose very quickly. So they tend to actually put vegetable fat. So dalda, which is a solid vegetable fat, is actually used, and vegetable fat actually has lots of trans fat in it. So if you think that, you know, your cookie is actually pretty healthy, it's not. Make it at home. It's actually better.
Like most.
So for the cookie that we like love to make, we use butter. And specifically, I, and Shirin has a different thought on this probably, but I really like unsalted butter. It's kind of the most ideal way to utilize it, especially in baked goods, because salted butter offloads moisture when it heats up. It's not a lot of moisture, but I feel like if I can control for it, then nothing like it.
A lot of issues, bro.
So butter definitely over liquid fats. Butter, and there are three reasons for that. Butter definitely holds a lot more shape, even when it's cooled down. So that's why, you know, some cookie recipes will ask you to make the batter and then put it in the fridge or the freezer for 30 minutes. And that's really because you want to get that butter to start mixing in and getting all those flavors inside of it. The second thing is that it doesn't leak out of the cookie. So especially when you keep it out in the fridge after you've baked it or something, and you're like, you know, just like keeping them outside. If you have a cookie with like liquid fat, you will notice that they'll start leaking. A very common example is when you go to Subway and check out the cookie, they'll always have like oil leaks. And that's basically because they have used liquid fat over there. Okay, so those are the five essential things. The sixth essential thing is really your flavorant. And because this is a podcast, and if we were given the reins to talk about this, we could go on for hours. But we've strategically thought of the fact that let's just talk about chocolate, like that as the primary flavorant. And Shirin, lead that conversation, please.
Okay, so couple of things. One, chocolate chips are great. They're fun, they're convenient and whatnot, but they're not the only way to make a chocolate chip cookie. So we actually, and we agree on this for once, we really like shards of unevenly chopped chocolate in our cookies, and different shapes and sizes, because then they melt differently. And again, each bite is different. So that is one thing. Second is that if you can get your hands on chocolate discs, sorry for the lisp, it always happens. Those are super fun too. Basically, a disc is like a chocolate chip, but like flatter, and those melt in a really nice, like, lead way.
They're just fancier chocolate chips, right?
Yeah, they are. And they're not very easily available in India, I have to say. But I have seen this on Instagram a lot. A lot of people baking cookies for the first time tend to go to dairy milk as their chocolate chip source, which is fine. I'm not fond of dairy milk in chocolate chip cookies, but if you must, please make sure you chop it up properly. Don't be like, okay, these are the pieces of dairy milk, so I'm going to put one piece of dairy milk in each cookie. Firstly, be generous, please. And secondly, just chop. So that your chocolate, no matter how it is, where it's from, whatever color, shape, whatever it is, it melts. That's the important part, because your one single piece of Dairy Milk chocolate is not going to melt. I'm sorry to say. Now, adding on to this, I know a lot of recipes will be like, oh my God, use dark chocolate. And like, that's the best. You do you. Because like, I love milk chocolate. And I think I love the sweetness. I have a big sweet tooth. Like, it's actually probably bigger than my other teeth.
Oh my God. We need to add a sting here, like a joke. Sharon joke.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, so I'm okay with you substituting dark chocolate for milk chocolate, or just like mixing the two up. And I think cookies are a great place for you to use your white chocolate as well, because white chocolate is real.
Yeah,
Is it even chocolate? Like,
it's fat.
It's not. Yeah, so you can put white chocolate into your cookies and add a little more flavor, but yeah.
All right, so now that we know the essentials of a cookie, we know how much Shirin loves milk chocolate in her cookies, which is judgmental, like whatever, it's not the best. But what? Now let's just get into this one like very, very divisive conversation that always comes up when we're talking about cookies, is how the hell do I make a chewy cookie / how do I make a crispy cookie? So for this, I've done some research and I call this the cookie ready reckoner. So now in this, I want to make a crispy cookie, I have to change the chemistry across the board in my dough. For my flour, I would have to use a high protein flour, which is very similar. So like maida, whole wheat, these two flours work excellently well. Okay, so in butter, the softened butter is actually ideal for this kind of a cookie, because you want to beat it, and when you beat it, you're going to add air bubbles, similar to what you would have done with the eggs. But what happens with the butter is kind of unique, because when you add those air bubbles, the carbon dioxide from your baking soda will actually get trapped in these air bubbles, and that is essentially what will make it very light and airy, so that will add to the crispiness of the cookie as well. For a crispy cookie also, and this is, we've already touched this, like sugar, you just want to do white sugar, don't do brown sugar, and that will work fairly quickly. And for the eggs, I mean, ideally, you know, and this is kind of surprising, but through my research, I found out that if you really want a super crispy, a cookie, dump the eggs, don't put the eggs at all. They'll actually work a lot better.
Really?
Yeah, because essentially the fat from the yolks make the cookie a little dense. This will kind of annul that. You can put egg whites, or like we said in the last segment, you can actually swap the egg whites for aquafaba or agar, and they'll also work essentially the same way.
Okay, interesting, very interesting. I do have something to add. And more on the, I'm on team chewy.
Yeah.
So more brown sugar for your chewy cookies, because typically like proper brown sugar, not white sugar that has been colored brown, which happens a lot, unfortunately. Proper brown sugar has molasses, or at least a higher quantity of molasses. And that will make your cookies more chewy, literally. You also want to make sure, like I said, that, you know, you use your eggs one after the other, and that's somehow more important for the chewy ones. And what I'm thinking of when I think of the perfect cookie, just to be clear, is that it's not chewy throughout. It's crispy on the edges, but it's chewy in the center. So that's what, like, when you hear me speaking, that's the cookie that I'm going for. I don't know what Achyut wants to do with his
life. So if you want like a crispy edge, that's just a function of keeping the cookie baked for a little longer than what it says. So like if it says 13 minutes, go for 14, 15, and that'll do it. So now the chewy cookie, I have thoughts on the chewy cookie.
Yes, carry on.
So for chewy cookie, you would want actually low protein flour. You're going to die in this. So a chewy cookie, the kind of flour you would want is like a cake flour, which has less gluten formation possibilities, or oat flour. Oat flour also does really, really well in this. Someone said quinoa flour as well, but I was like, I don't believe that. The fat is where, now this is where like you can actually add liquid fats. So instead of having softened butter, if you use melted butter, or Shirin, brown butter, This would do so well in a chewy cookie.
Can we talk a little bit about brown sure. butter? Because I feel like it's hot. Brown butter just smells so good. Yeah. And it's just perfect. It's great. And you make good brown butter. So please go ahead and describe the process. Don't just say ki garam karna hai, but please tell us your learnings.
So low flame, very, very low flame. Put your knob of butter in and then start swirling it and keep on swirling it essentially. You're trying to reduce the amount of moisture in the butter. So you're trying to see it starts sizzling. It will start turning a little bit of an amber color. So it, similar to how like if you have ever made caramel, there'll be like that first like spotting of brown. But in caramel, you are always told that if that spotting happens, then you just have to be a little bit more vigilant. And you hope for that whole thing to turn a little bit more caramelly or like ambery, and then you can switch it off the heat. But in brown butter, at least from my learnings, the moment I see amber, I switch off the heat, just because it's fat. At the end of the day, it will cook a lot more and very, very quickly, and it'll turn into that really nice brown butter. And the smell, I like kind of associated with like a nuttiness, and also very similar to how when you're like cooking ghee. If you've ever made ghee, there's a very similar smell to that.
No, I disagree. When ghee is being made, I just like shut myself in my room. But brown butter, I am out of my room because I'm usually the one making it. But yeah, guys, he's right. Brown butter requires a little bit of patience and a little bit of love. Okay, so now that we know what it takes to bake a great cookie, we know that anyone who's listening has all the, let's just say, has a scoop. And you can just go out and check out whichever recipe like meets your fancy, and hopefully this episode helps you make, you know, a better cookie. But we have two more things to talk about. One, Archit, let's talk about cooling the dough. And I know you touched upon this earlier, and then let's talk about baking time, because also something that you mentioned and something that I wouldn't be so averse to your little science situation coming in and helping out on. So let's go. Why don't we hear it from Archit Lost himself?
Oh God. So in terms of like the fridge situation, what I've learned through the process is the fact that when you take your cookie dough and you place it in the fridge, two things happen. One, your butter starts to solidify, which is kind of great because it like attracts all those flavors that you've like beaten into them a lot closer, and the second thing, it makes it a little bit more malleable. So I traditionally don't like to make drop cookies, which is like you take a spoon and you just like scoop and put it in. I use an ice cream scooper because I want to be very, very specific in terms of my weight distribution across.
No, so you're an Instagrammer. Yeah.
No. It's because I want equal cookies, because then my family starts fighting on the size of the cookie that everyone's getting. So this controls some of that, not all of that, but some of that.
But you like do you like to scoop your cookie dough out before you cool it or after? Because I like to do it before I cool it.
I have never been able to scoop it out before I cool it because I just make a mess. So I usually put my cookie dough in the freezer for like 30 minutes, especially like in the summers, like in India, in Delhi summers, and then just scoop them out. And then if I have to store them like that, I'll just put them in again. But otherwise, I'll like put it in the oven right after.
I think I'm going to bake cookies tonight.
I know, I'm kind of excited.
I think there's no greater joy than just like having cookie dough in like prepared portions in your freezer.
You know, I did that once. I made like 60 cookies and it was the best. It was the best.
No, same. Yeah, not 60 because I'm not crazy, but it was definitely the best. And I mean, just knowing that you know they're there. Yeah. Cookies for emergencies, I think.
And the other thing was like, when I used to make these like big batches, I used to just bake them all off, and like my family would like consume them so quickly. But now, you know, if I have them in the freezer, they're like, they don't want to turn on the like the oven and put it in.
Listen, you're making it sound like your family is a bunch of lazy people, and they're really, really
they're very
not.
Lazy when it comes to this. Like, you have no idea. We have spoons inside our freezer for our ice cream. We don't even take it out anymore. So, I like, they're very lazy.
That's really messed up. But also, just disclaimer, you don't have to chill your dough. So, if there is a cookie emergency, so to speak, you can bake your cookies right after you make the dough. It's okay. No one is going to come and arrest you. But it's just better to cool the dough. if you can't and you just must bake them, go for it. But while one batch is baking, at least put the rest of the dough in the fridge. That much you can do for us.
Agreed. So Shirin, tell us about the second question.
Yes, my second question is baking time. I know different ovens do different things, moods, feelings, weather, everything comes into account. But have you cracked like that ideal minute mark for the perfect chewy cookie?
Yeah, so it's a function of two things, temperature and time. So for temperature, you would want to do between 165 and 180. And I usually keep it at like 175. And then the time, it really depends on the size of the cookie and like the stuff inside of it. But if it's a very chocolate heavy cookie, then you would want to do less time. So around the 9 and 10 minute mark. So 9 minute mark is where you want to start looking at your cookie and like stress about how good or bad it's looking. And then 10 minutes, you just have to take it out. And if it's anything like an oatmeal cookie and things like that, then for that, you can go from 10 to 12. But really nothing more than like 15, at max 15 if you're doing a very dense cookie, yeah.
Alright. Okay. Bye.
See you. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and we hope that you listen to more episodes, all of the descriptions. Can you do the exit?
Yeah. Alright, I'm going to say this again. And it applies also to our listeners. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for listening. I have a feeling this was a bit of a long episode, but hope you learned something that will be helpful. And we'll talk to you very, very soon.
See you.
Bye.
This episode of Getting Lost with Archit and Shirin was produced by Natasha Rati Kapoor, edited by Ananya Gupta, and written and conceptualized by Shirin Rai Gupta and Archit Agarwal.